welcome to the Nutrition Awareness Podcast, co-hosted by yours truly, Kate Richardson
and Megan Pacheci. We're two registered dietitians here to make your life easier by debunking diet myths, sharing scientific information about nutrition, and keeping you motivated to reach your goals.
We want to teach you everything we know by giving you real life examples of how we've helped our combined thousands of clients transform their lives, lose weight, and get healthy without having to go on another cookie cutter diet.
On this podcast, we'll be giving you our best advice, strategies, and mindset shifts so you too can reach your goals using food and, most importantly, enjoy the process. Hello, and welcome back to the Nutrition Awareness Podcast. This is Megan, and today I am here with a very special guest. Her name is Monica Isola. She is the owner of Restore Her, which is an orthopedic and pelvic health practice that specializes in treating pelvic pain, urinary and bowel conditions, sexual dysfunction, and pre- and postnatal recovery. So, Monica, I have worked with you personally, but I was reading your story, and I know that you previously specialized in sports physical therapy, but that changed after your first child. So,
yes,
how and why did you pivot and kind of get into where you are now with your own practice?
Yeah, so I went through physical therapy school, got my doctorate in physical therapy, and right away I'm like, okay, I'm treating orthopedics, I'm treating all the sports injuries. And I did that for about 5 years, absolutely loved it. And I had my first baby. So basically went through my first pregnancy, postpartum, and I felt like I came out of it completely like confused about my own body. And just, I felt like there was this really big gray space of just not really knowing what I should or shouldn't be doing. And I felt like if I, you know, I'm a physical therapist, I specialize in orthopedics. Like, yeah, if I'm confused,
you know the body.
Yeah, if I'm confused, yeah. There's probably a lot of people out there who are just as confused and or even more lost than me. Mm-hmm. But that really got me nosediving into this niche of pelvic floor therapy that, again, specializes in pelvic floor dysfunction. And honestly, what I call it also is, it's basically what I treat is orthopedics on steroids, because I was before treating, you know, the whole body, and I was treating, you know, the spine and the hips and all the muscles, but then there's this whole area of the pelvis that I was missing. Mm-hmm. And so now I feel like that's what I do now. I treat the whole body, and I've been able to, again, kind of help myself with stuff, but it's led me into this, like, you know, just unbelievable passion of treating, and I focus on women, but treating women with and treating pelvic floor dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell me, so I was one of your clients, that's how we know each other. I think I found you on Instagram, maybe.
Yes, probably. That's where I started.
I'm like watching videos and learning all this stuff. And yeah, kind of like you, postpartum, and even for me, my problem started way back in college. But kind of figuring out, yeah, you may have heard of the pelvic floor, maybe you've done some Kegels, maybe you've done Pilates. Mm-hmm. They talk a lot about the pelvic floor there, but really understanding its relation to your body as a whole and how that can affect everything from your day-to-day function to types of exercise, how you can exercise. And I mean, everything from like sexual dysfunction or pain, yeah, and all of these different things. So can you tell
Absolutely.
Us maybe some of the common reasons why someone should seek out a pelvic floor therapist?
Yeah. So if you have, so I'm just going to throw out a whole bunch of examples, but yeah, if you notice that you're leaking with jumping or coughing and sneezing, pelvic floor therapy can help. If you notice you're having pelvic heaviness, whether it's like, you know, after having a baby, you may notice that at the end of a long day or after working out, those are things that can be treated with pelvic floor therapy. If you have overactive bladder, you feel like you have to pee all the time, that can be something, you know, treated through therapy. Like you said, sexual dysfunction that can play a big role in this. So if you first off have pain with intercourse, but also issues with arousal, orgasm, and ejaculation, those can all be stemmed from some pelvic floor issues. Constipation, and we'll probably go more into that because there's definitely a big nutritional, you know, mm-hmm, aspect with that. for sure during pregnancy, and a lot of people don't realize that, but even during pregnancy, there's a lot of good things that pelvic floor therapy can do to help prepare. Okay. Because when we think about it, just like any surgery, like there's prehab, and not that I'm saying, childbirth is always a surgery, mm-hmm. but we know there's going to be a lot of trauma of muscles. Like mm-hmm. that's whether it's, again, like vaginally or through C-section, your body's going to go through a lot. So like the more you can prepare your body for it, the more you can strengthen. Again, there's so much out there that just like, again, gets us back and forth of like, oh, like, should I strengthen my core? Should I not? Yeah. You read all the stuff online.
Yeah.
But you really should. Like, the stronger you are going into childbirth, that can really help with the actual process and postpartum. And I, at the same time, never say I can prevent things. But there are things that we can do to reduce the risk of like tearing or, help with labor, like pushing, methods and positioning and things like that to help with labor. So
I always tell people childbirth is the hardest workout that I've ever done in my life. So it, that preparation ahead of time and being strong going into it, I think, was really, I pushed for 3 straight hours, and I remembered in the middle of it feeling like this was like a CrossFit open workout times a million, because that's like the hardest thing I had done prior to that, and the most exhausted I had ever felt, but it was like 5 of those in a row, and then it just kept going from there. And so I can't imagine if I wasn't in a good physical condition, like would I have even been able to push him out? Or like I probably would have had an emergency C-section at that point, or they would have said like, we got to take you. So
it's hard to say, but but it's true. And like, again, there's so much we can do when we think of our pelvic floor muscles. Now, I'll also make sure I go back. Like, I definitely want to explain what it is too, because
is it a bunch of muscles?
Yeah. Muscle? This
is it all connected?
Yes. Like. I think a lot of people now have been hearing about the pelvic floor, and some maybe a buzzword. I'm not sure, but there's still a lot of people out there that are like, well, what it like? Don't exactly what know what that? It is.
Do men have a pelvic floor?
Yes, okay. They do. Great question. They do. So basically, your pelvic floor is the floor of your core.
Okay.
So when we think about our core, a lot of times we just think of our abs, but really our core, it's like a container. So if you can picture like a soda can, it has a top, a bottom, a front, and a back. So the top is going to be our diaphragm, so our primary breathing muscle. Then the front's going to be our ab muscles. The back is going to be our back muscles. And then the bottom of it is going to be our pelvic floor muscles. And so if you can almost imagine like a hammock, those pelvic floor muscles almost look like a hammock at the bottom of our pelvis. And they again, have a couple very important roles. So one of them is helping to support the pelvic organs. So our pelvic organs, that's going to be our bladder in the front, the uterus for female, prostate in men in the middle, and then our rectum in the back. So one of its jobs is to help support them along with like connective tissue and stuff. Another role is overall core stability. So it helps a lot with posture and, helping all of those core muscles to maintain good stability. Then again, there's a sexual component, as well as a sphincteric component, which is basically, what allows us to maintain, to not leak. So, to not have any urine or, fecal leakage. So those are its jobs. So again, if there's dysfunction in these muscles, it can create issues in all of those areas. Again, going back to urinary issues of the bladder, so it can cause leaking, it can cause urinary retention, overactive bladder type symptoms. So again, the feeling of like having to pee all the time, normal amounts of peeing, you should be able to hold it, your bladder, for at least 2 to 5 hours. So if you're going less than every 2 hours, that's considered urinary frequency, and that's not quote unquote normal. Obviously, if you're drinking a ton of fluid, stuff like that, it can be on that shorter side. But if you find yourself like you know, every hour. And I see it a lot with like certain, I mean, I see a lot of different things, but like a lot of times with people who like, with who are like it taking classes or even like professionals where they have clients like every hour and they're like having to go to the bathroom in between each client. That's definitely something that, you know, it's showing some weakness going on, and that's something that can get worse. So like you also don't want to just like deal with it. And everyone has their level of like bothersome. Some people it really doesn't bother them, but if you're like, if that's the first thing on your mind, if you're like go somewhere new and you're like, where's the bathroom? Like, I need to know at all times so that I can run. That's a sign of some pelvic floor weakness.
Okay. So let's say I'm a new client and I'm coming in for constipation. What would an initial assessment be like, look like? How does that work?
Great question. So initial assessment for everyone, and then I'll kind of like go into the constipation piece. But and this is also, I love that we're talking about this because so many people also, you know, again, this is just such a new feel. It's not that new, but it's becoming more popular and people are hearing about it more, but still have no idea what the heck I do. So you would come into my office, and I actually have all of my first my patients, like when I'm first assessing them, come into my actual office where we sit down, because this is a nerve-wracking thing too. So like, you know, kind of like just one-on-one, just talking about things. My first, you know, initial thing I always say to them, like, first off, I thank them for trusting me with their care, because these are very sensitive and taboo topics people don't really like to talk about. And so a lot of times my patients are like suffering by themselves and they feel like they can't ask anyone.
And probably for years. You're not the first line of defense.
That's
Like, you know, when someone has an issue, I don't think the first line of defense is let me look up a pelvic floor therapist.
It's not. And it should be, but it's not. They've probably gone to multiple like whether it's gynecologists or, you know, GI doctors. And again, yes, you're right. So basically they'll get desperate enough in a way to come to me. It's something that they've been dealing with for a while. And I just tell them, like, I talk about pee, poop, and sex all day and I love what I do. So there's like no TMI ever with me. And then we just go into like their subjective history of everything that's been going on. And really, again, getting the nitty gritty details. So with your example of constipation, I definitely pay attention to the Bristol stool scale, which, again, it kind of, it's a scale that shows different diagrams of, your bowel movement. So the idea is that we want to have more of a log type consistency when it comes to our poops. So, like one side of the spectrum is more of like the constipated, more firm balls. And then the other side's more loose. And so even like explaining that, because I'll say that was my, I deal with constipation. Like that is my biggest thing that probably, like, you know, outside of the having a baby, like has gotten me so passionate, because I totally thought it was normal to strain and to have to push really hard to poop. And I had like, you know, stomach issues most of my life, and just, I don't know, I just thought it was kind of normal and something I should have to deal with, especially with my, my constipation. So I go into like, explaining. It's also not even the frequency, because we think, oh, I'm constipated if I don't go every day. Mm-hmm. Like if I go every day, oh, it's fine. But everyone has their normal. So some people's normal can be every day or twice a day. Or, you know, maybe more. And then other people's can be every other day to every 2 days. And that, so the frequency.
Depends on your normal.
Yeah, exactly. Normal? Yeah. So it's not just about the frequency. It's about the quality. It's about, are you having to push really hard? Like you should not have to push. Because that does create extra strain on the pelvic floor muscles. And that can weaken them. And it's really, you know, it's not going to obviously be that one time, but for years and years of that, that can really lead to weakness of the pelvic floor, create more issues of, you know, pelvic organ descent or pelvic organ prolapse. So, so as much as, like, no one comes, and it's funny, actually, no one comes to me for constipation. Okay. Like, I actually wish.
It comes up later.
Yeah, it always comes up as a secondary issue.
That's the same with me, though. No one comes to me for constipation. But, man, we talk about it. Oh, we get it. We get into it.
Because that.
It's never the primary problem.
That's right. Yeah.
Or very rarely.
And it's really fascinating how that is, for me, if that is an issue. And usually, you know, that's a lot of times that's tied to their leaking, but they, again, they don't realize it, but that's one of the first things we make sure they're addressing. So right away I go to, you know, talk about certain behavioral habits for it. So I'm all about the squatty potty. Mm-hmm. So that's, like, you know, big thing I like to recommend. Then, you know, briefly talk about, like, making sure they're getting adequate water and
water is the biggest one on my side. Really? Of things. Yeah. It's the biggest. Yeah. People think they're getting enough water, or they know that they're not getting enough water, but water is probably, because it seems like such a simple solution.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
But if we're looking at that chart and you've got the little rabbit pellets, like, I can see that there's not enough moisture there to help everything move along. Yeah. And so we need to add more moisture to your body to help create that log.
Yeah.
And people don't really think, they think, like, oh, I'll just do a bunch of fiber. And it's like, that's not the answer.
Yeah.
Because you need the moisture to help move that along.
Yeah. Do you usually have people, like, kind of, like, diary their stuff, or how do you get them? Or
I just had someone today, and she's like, well, how much water should I drink in a day? And I'm like, it's not about that. It's where are you now? Because I can't go from you're drinking 10 ounces of water a day and then tell you to drink 90 ounces. Yeah. Like, you're going to be in the bathroom every 5 minutes. You're going to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's going to feel like you're waterboarding yourself. Like, well, that's not where we're going to start. So with her, we started with 40 ounces because she was only doing, like, 8 to 10.
Yeah.
And so we broke it up, and she's going to do 10 ounces as soon as she wakes up, 10 ounces at lunch, 10 ounces when she gets home from work, and 10 ounces at dinner.
Nice.
And we're just going to see what the difference is in her digestion with that 40 ounces. Mm-hmm. We're going to get her used to that in the next 2 to 3 weeks, and then we're going to reevaluate from there. There's really no science behind that 64 ounces a day. Yeah. Well, there's really no science behind it.
Uh-huh.
That being said, it's probably a great place for most people to start and see how that and see how that goes. But it's really about, like, meeting that person where they currently are with whatever issue that they're having. Let's do a trial. Let's see how this works. And then let's up it from there if we need to, or if that fixes the issue, then okay.
No, that's huge. And then especially if they're, like, I have a lot of postpartum moms who are breastfeeding. So that then throws a whole nother thing, because they're probably going to
need. Stealing all that moisture.
Yeah. So even more with that water.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how, again, you kind of structure it that way to give them, like, points to do it. Because especially when you're working with a new postpartum mom, it's like, they have got a million things to think about. Like, the last thing they can really prioritize, or, you know, is water, or just, you know, themselves, really.
Yeah.
But the importance of that, and so that's huge. So that, thank you. That's going to be helpful for me too.
Yeah.
To be able to talk to them about. So then talking about that, and then getting into, so then my big thing is teaching them, again, more tools, to help them address that. But then going back to the assessment, so I'll kind of get a baseline understanding of kind of where they're at that point. And then,
so this is all talking.
We're chatting. Yes. Okay. So then once I get their whole thing and their goals, cause that's at the end of the day, like, that's obviously the most important thing, what they want, you know, what their main goals are. And then I kind of go into quickly, briefly explaining, again, about what I'm going to be doing. So in the assessment and reviewing the pelvic floor, because it's just good. We can't see our own pelvic floor muscles. It's good to see it again. So I have a chart. I have, like, a little diagram of the core muscles. And so I explain, okay, this assessment, there's going to be two parts. It's going to be, I'm going to do a full orthopedic screen. So basically looking at your muscles, your joints, your overall mobility, because these core muscles, they work together, but they're also attached to all these joints and, you know, to they're connected to your spine, your pelvis. So if your hips are super tight, that's going to affect the way these muscles function mm-hmm. and your pelvic floor functions. So I'm going to do a full orthopedic screen. Looking at that, I'll have, you know, you bend back and forth, look at your spine movement, your squats, assess muscle strength. And then the second part will be an internal pelvic floor assessment. So this is going to be, so there's two ways to be able to assess for females, to assess the pelvic floor muscles through the vaginal canal or through the anorectal canal. So first session, I always start with just doing a vaginal, assessment through, of the pelvic floor muscles, mainly because most people don't know we also treat, anorectally, and that would, you know, catch people off guard at first. So we like to talk that through. And of course, all of this is with, you know, full consent and full, you know, making sure everyone feels really comfortable about it. But so we don't use any tools, like nothing like if you were at like a gynecologist's office, it's just a single glove finger. And we're assessing the mobility of your pelvic floor muscles. So you've got like a superficial, a middle, and a deeper layer. And so again, assessing the mobility for any sensitivity or pain. And then the way we have knots in our back, we can also have knots like that and tension in our pelvic floor. So I'm assessing for overall tone. Is this, are your muscles really tight and overactive? Or is it really low tone? And for most people are actually really surprised. It's usually the overactive muscles that creates more of an issue. And so I'm assessing for that as well as the coordination of the muscle strength. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk them through, but I'll have them do like a deep diaphragmatic breath. I'll have them do Kegels. I'll also have them do a lower abdominal engagement to see how all of these muscles are working together to just get a good idea of where the baseline is, where they're at.
Yeah. I think one thing that was really surprising to me and maybe surprising to other people is like, if you have any kind of like urinary incontinence, the answer is not necessarily like just do 1,000 Kegels.
Correct.
Like, that's not actually going to fix the problem.
Correct. And if anything, it could probably make it worse.
Yeah, especially if you're on that, like, tighter end of things, and then you're just working it, and then it's,
Yeah, and so what I tell most people, because it is so hard to wrap our heads around that, especially because, first off, culture really talks about the idea, especially I get this around a lot of my, like, postpartum moms who mm-hmm. it's this idea of like, oh, I want a tight vagina.
Everything's stretched out.
And they really think that is causing the issues of leaking. And anyone in general, if they have issues of leaking, they think, oh, everything's just like loosey goosey. I need mm-hmm. to hold everything in and tense up more. And so what I try to tell people is that tightness equals weakness. Mm. So, and this pertains to our whole body. If my bicep was really tight, it would be really weak and dysfunctional. And so that's how our pelvic floor muscles, if they're really tight, which they can be if they're overworking because of other weaknesses of our core, after, a trauma, like after birth, just different things that can create, you know, again, strain that creates weakness of these muscles, which can, again, lead to more tightness. And then vice versa. It's a little mm-hmm. bit of a cycle. Or sometimes the tightness, because it's overactive, can lead to more weakness. Mm-hmm. But just remembering tightness equals weakness is really helpful for people to understand that and to be able to just let go. Because those people, I have to teach them to be able to breathe and to be able to lengthen our pelvic floor muscles. Yeah. So the Kegel is tightening them up, tight, 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 which, okay, we need to be able to tighten them, but we need to equally be able to lengthen them to have good strength. And so that ability to learn, like, we need our pelvic floor muscles to be lengthened to have a bowel movement, to have a baby. Those are all times when we need these to pee, also pee and poop. We need our muscles relaxed and just kind of like lengthen kind of out of the way. So, so really training the body on how to understand how to be able to do that is a big piece, huge piece of what I work on with a lot of patients.
I think it was you that explained it to me. It was almost like there's like a basement and then there's like a first floor, second floor, third floor, and like learning how to move the muscles through those floors versus just like trying to tighten the muscle and then loosen it and then trying to tighten and loosen it. It's like an elevator going up and down. That was really helpful for me to kind of like visualize what's going on.
No, mental, like, imagery, things like that.
Because you can't see it. I can see my fingers and my bicep and all. Like, I can't see what's going on in there.
Absolutely. So, the elevator is a really good one. I also like to do, like, a claw imagery of, like, you know, the claws that pick up stuffed animals. So imagining, and especially if you're pairing it with your breath when you're inhaling, you're almost imagining that claw opening out of your vagina. And then if you were, say, trying to tighten it, then you can imagine that claw kind of coming together and pulling up. So there's lots of different fun imagery things that we use. But exactly, we need that because we're not inherently born with this one huge awareness of our pelvic floor muscles, but they play a huge role in our everyday functioning. So that's really helpful in recovery of these muscles.
One of my things was breath, like not marrying my breath to movement and doing it in the exact opposite way that I should have been doing it and learning how to like bring the breath together with the movement to help prevent some of that leakage was a big thing.
So that's huge.
I'm like, definitely breathing? What? How am I not breathing right? Like, seems like this should be easy.
So a lot of people, so with the example of like working out, a lot of times what we see is people really holding their breath. So like straining during, and the idea is usually during the hardest part of a movement. So when you're trying to really like pull it up and finish that movement, we will hold our breath. And so that creates some strain and some bearing down on our pelvic floor. So trying to learn to exhale during the hardest part of a movement, and just really, trying to pair that. And at the end of the day, just breathing in general is better than holding your breath. So that, like, I try to like not have people like, you don't have to overthink it too much, just making sure you're not holding your breath. But if you can really train and work in trying to exhale during the hardest part of a movement, that's like the best. That's really good for your pelvic floor and your, you know, the whole core again. But yeah, that's a huge part. People like they come in and they're like, okay, oh man, like breathing and really, like, again, it's almost like too simple. Like, and I tell them, I'm like, I promise this is not just a kumbaya thing. This truly, it plays a role in movement. The pelvic floor and your diaphragm kind of should move like a piston. And so if you're not getting good movement in that diaphragm, it's just going to push down and create more strain. So I have, and it's pretty cool how quickly just that piece can help with certain things.
And I think, like, from my perspective, if you're out there and you're like, there's certain movements that I can't do, there's certain exercises I can't do, like, I can't run anymore because I will pee my pants if I try to run down the street, you should see a pelvic floor therapist. Like, if you find that it's preventing you from doing certain things in life, it's not, that is not something you have to live with forever.
Absolutely. There's so many interventions. And even, so, you know, even if a pelvic floor, I think a pelvic floor therapist is a great place to start in almost being your coach and your, and help you guide you through, because you can get so many conservative approaches and good behavioral habits and ways to learn to address it, to improve it. And a lot of patients, it helps their symptoms 100%. Some of them, it's, you know, 75 to 80, and but then there's other things that can be done past that. There's pessaries, so that's like a little silicone support that you can actually insert into the vaginal canal. that can help just, and I like to have people think about it. Imagine like, it's like a knee brace. So it's not, there are certain uses for it more that are more permanent where you really use them a lot, especially for older patients. That's something that they recommend a lot. But we're starting to see really cool research. It's like coming out of Australia, showing using a pessary as a way to start strengthening the pelvic floor muscles more. And the idea is to gradually work your way out of it.
Oh.
So there's cool, you know, there's a lot of, so the pessary and
describe what a pessary looks like.
So there's a couple different types. So there's, and I'll probably like confuse the two, but there's more, one that's going to be a little bit more of like a support. So it's almost like a cube look. And then there's one that will look more like a ring, but there's actually a lot of different varieties. They look a bit different. But it's something that you can insert yourself. You can take it in and out and it's something, I mean, you can even keep for a couple months at a time, but it's, especially for younger patients, it can be something really helpful. So say if you have some degree of like prolapse, which is basically where there's a little bit of a descent of some of those pelvic organs into the vaginal canal. So some of that can cause some leaking. So you can use that. Again, like say you're fine to do everything, but when you go to run, like you're still leaking a little bit. Well, use that as an extra support. And again, it doesn't help for everyone, for all conditions, but it can help a lot of people. And you can also start, Poise Impressa has like a good, almost kind of looks like a tampon, but that's more of like a disposable one you can try. But that's a good product that you can always try, like buy a box. Try it out
when you,
yeah, there we go.
Poise Impressa.
And try it out. And it's, if it's something that helps, then you would probably be a really good candidate for a pessary. And, you know, again, your traditional use of a pessary, or traditionally they write them more for people who are a lot older, but there's so much benefit that can come from it for anyone. Same thing if like you have a, you know, history of a prolapse and you're going through another pregnancy and it's a time where there's just gonna be extra weight, extra strain. So that's again another tool that you can use. So what's nice is like there's a lot of stuff out there that a pelvic floor therapist can help give you a lot of those different more conservative options versus like, well, okay, it's just gonna be like you're going to live like this and then surgery eventually,
yeah.
Which can mm-hmm. be a lot of times the advice that people are given.
Mm-hmm. One of the cool things that you taught me, so when I was doing CrossFit, I always had issues with my shoulder, which was actually a issue with my pec muscle, not with my shoulder, obviously, because like I'm just tight in general, always have been, very inflexible. But then I got this like hook thing that I could stick in my shoulder and massage it out, and that would just feel so good, and then I wouldn't be in pain anymore. So I would use this hook on my shoulder. Well, you introduced me to like the same thing, but for my pelvic floor muscles.
That's correct.
So it was basically like a hook that I stuck up there and just massaged through and like loosened things up, and that helped to decrease a lot of pain, get more flexibility.
Yes.
So like similarly to other muscles, like same thing.
Yep. It's called a pelvic wand, and I recommend them a lot. And it sounds super intimidating at first, but the idea is, again, it's just like another stretching tool that you'd have for other things. It's just an excellent stretch tool for your pelvic floor muscles. And it is a great way to, again, have that consistency, because really most of my patients I treat once a week. So we work on that a little bit in the session, but then the rest of the week, this allows patients to be able to work on it on their own, mm-hmm. And get to a point where, you know, maybe you're not using it all that often, but here and there, like if something starts to feel tighter or you notice symptoms, you right away get back to using that tool. And it can really help just calm things down much quicker. And again, it gives you that feeling of autonomy of like, you can do something about it versus like, oh man, like let me see how this goes, or do I have to go back and see someone? Or so it's a nice tool a lot of my patients do really well with. It also really helps with people who are having pain with any kind of insertion. So with tampons, during sex. So that's something really helpful that not only is it good for them to kind of use on a more regular basis at the beginning, but it's also that something that can be used right before intercourse, and that can really help with pain.
Interesting.
So, so that can work really well for that.
Okay. Now, when it comes to exercise, so let's say you have a client who comes in, and whether it's postpartum or not, and she's like, you know, I used to be able to squat, I used to be able to do box jumps, burpees, and I just can't do any of these things anymore. Yeah. I guess, what do you recommend? Is it, you know, doing different exercises? Is it doing them in a different way? Yeah. Is it... Tell me what that would look like.
Yeah. So a lot of times, most of the times when people come and tell me that, it's because they can't do it anymore because they're leaking, or they have some kind of pain, like pelvic heaviness with the activity. So right away, I try to tell people, first off, it's not the exercise itself. It's how you're doing it. Because there's also a lot of things out there of like, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Like so much stuff. Like you shouldn't do planks after you have a baby. There's a lot of different things. And so I really, again, go back to, it's not the exercise, it's how you're doing it. And it's also how used to it your body is. So someone who has been running for years and years and years, their body can handle running, and it's not a thing. It's not as, impactful as someone who hasn't run. So are we just going to say no one can run? No, let's just back it off. Let's see, let's just get backtrack a little bit. So say with box jumps, I would just backtrack. I'd start with jumping, start with training jumping mechanics. When it comes to jumping, a lot of times we tend to land super hard. If you're really hearing your feet pounding, you're going way too hard. You need to make sure you're softening your knees. So working on that mechanics, plus the breathing, that's another, mm-hmm. another big piece with jumping, is that we tend to hold our breath. So starting on a flat surface, and then from there, getting your body adapted to it, doing it enough times, increasing reps, then increase to a little bit higher of a step. And it's really from that point on, it's about working it more gradually. And I do encourage people to work into it, because some people, box jumps, whether it's running, trampoline, they're like jumping jacks, a big one. Oh, I leak when I do that, so I never do it.
Right.
And that's not the answer. So the only way you can get back to doing it without leaking is by doing it, but you have to just work your way up gradually.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I have people that they come and I teach them how to jump, and they start, and some people it's the first jumping jack, but some people it's like five jumping jacks, and they're like, oh, after, like, if I do any more, I'm gonna leak. And it's like, okay, let's stop here. But now, five's your number. So every day I want you to do five, focus on form. And by the next week they come back and they're like, oh, I can do 10.
Cool.
So with whatever it is that you want to do, I never say you know,
just don't do that.
Just don't do it.
Yeah. That's so frustrating for me. I hate being told no. So if you're like, oh, well, I can't run without peeing, well, just don't run. Like, don't tell me that.
No. Yeah. Absolutely not. And again, it depends on what your goals are. I have some people who are like, oh, no, I don't care if I don't ever run again. I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, then that's fine. Then, you know, we can work on something else. And to the other extreme of other people who want to get back to running half marathons and okay, great, then let's work at this.
Yeah.
You know, it's mm-hmm. just going to, it'll take some time, but there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to get to that point.
Yeah.
Or let's try and let's see how far we can go.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I have one last question. Mm-hmm. Can you think of one of your favorite success stories? And maybe like walk us through what that was like.
Which thankfully there's a good amount of those. I think some of my favorite ones are the ones who pain with intercourse, because it's so obviously when it comes to sex, it's not just physical. It's a whole biopsychosocial model. So there's just a lot more ingrained in it, because it impacts your relationship, all that stuff. But probably being able to have, like, working with someone who from before they even had intercourse, like, they noticed that, like, with trying to insert a tampon, pain, and, like, mm-hmm. so it can start young. Mm-hmm. A term that a lot of times younger women can be diagnosed with, it's called vaginismus, and it's, sometimes gynecologists will pick up on it, which that's always a good thing. When they pick up on it early, it's so helpful. But that's basically where the pelvic floor muscles just this automatic spasm of the pelvic floor muscles. So it is basically like impossible to insert anything. Without forcing it. So that can show up pretty early. So it can just be something emotionally really difficult to deal with, as well as physically, because it hurts. So those are probably my favorite when I can get them. And so we talked about the pelvic wand. But another tool that we'll use for these patients they're called pelvic dilators. And so they come in different sizes, and you start with one that's like the size of like a pinky, and then they each increase. But helping someone through that whole process, to having them come to you and say they successfully had intercourse for the first time, is like never, ever, ever gets old. And usually, partners want to come in and like
give you a hug, buy you some flowers.
Right. and I will say, it is a two-way street, and the partners are equally as, involved in it. It's never just one person's fault fully. But yeah, so those are really sweet. But everything, I just love what I do, because people do come in with, they haven't told anyone about their issues. Right. And to have them be like, what? Like, I've been leaking for 10 years and it doesn't happen anymore. Like, this is incredible. Mm-hmm. This, it changes their life and it makes them more confident. So, yes, I love what I do.
And I would highly recommend her. So can you tell us where people can find you? Maybe your Instagram, your website.
Yeah, so they can find me on Instagram at RestoreHerPT. Also my website, RestoreHerPhysicalTherapy.com. Those are the two best ways, and I try to stay relatively active on Instagram.
Yeah, she has great videos.
And stuff. So yeah, and you can always DM me with any questions.
Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll talk soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Nutrition Awareness Podcast. And if you did find it helpful and want to share it with the whole world, screenshot this episode and tag us on Instagram in your stories at nutrition.awareness so we can connect with you.
To get notified about the next episode of Nutrition Awareness, be sure to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode.
And to create your own personalized nutrition plan with us, be sure to schedule your virtual or in-person consultation on our website, www.orlandodietitian.com.
Now get out there, fuel up, and live your healthiest life. We'll see you on the next episode.